This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
Today's episode is going to be taken from just a little bit of a different angle because of the fact that not very often do I talk about or have we've heard the association of our heart rate and how we feel. Now, I know that there's a lot of different metrics that we can look at, heart rate, blood pressure, but a value that is growing in popularity with growing research is what we call heart rate variability. And the question that I have in today's episode is to figure out how is this associated with the pain that we feel every day, but then also how is this associated with the risk of getting hurt, which I know a lot of you listeners are most likely in an active state of pain, but we also have to understand once you're out of pain, how can we actually prevent that from happening again? So today I have Dr. Torkel Faro, who is a pulse expert and is going to share with us all things HRV and then tell us a little bit more about his book by the end of today's episode. Dr. Torkel, it's so great to meet you. Thank you for being a guest on today's episode.
Nice to be here, Ashley, and talking about my passion. Thank you.
And the honor is all mine. Now, before we get into heart rate variability and the pulse itself, tell us a little bit more about yourself, your journey, and how you got involved with analyzing the heart rate, specifically HRV, heart rate variability.
Yeah, I'm a Norwegian doctor, general practitioner, emergency physician. I've been working all over Norway. How I came into the heart rate variability is actually through getting my own health in order. Because 10 years ago, my father died at 73, and I understood that if I don't do things with my lifestyle, I might end up, you know, having the same destiny. So I just looked around, looking for new information, new books, new knowledge about lifestyle and how to live longer and so on, and found that it was so many new findings compared to when I went to medical school in the last century. The last 5 years, I've been using watches and different heart rate trackers to track heart rate variability because it's such an important metric to find out your autonomic nervous system and your also your general physiology. The state of your mitochondria, the general state of your body is reflected in your heart rate. And now that we have these heart rate monitors, you know, so many people have it on their watches and rings and so on. And that is such a good tool to track our physiology. And in the beginning, it was just for my own sake, you know, to get better myself. But then I was asked to write a book about it that has been on a Norwegian bestseller list now for almost 2 years, translated into 8 languages, and it's actually the world's first guidebook on how to use the wearables and compare to the different lifestyle strategies, you know, like sleep, nutrition, exercise, rest, recovery, you know, all of the important things that we now know is so important for us.
Yeah, what a journey. It's interesting to see how events in our family kind of lead us to some of the actions that we take in regards to our health. And so thank you so much for sharing. So let's talk a little bit more about heart rate variability. It's certainly growing in popularity and seeing it on the internet. Tell us exactly what that is and why is it so important to track?
Yeah, so it's a variation between heartbeats, and that will tell us so much about the state of our body, particularly when it comes to the autonomic nervous system, our stress system. And then if we are in the parasympathetic restful state where most of the recovery happens, then when we breathe in, the heart rate goes up a little bit because there's more oxygen in the lungs, you know, it takes advantage of that. And then when we breathe out and there's less oxygen, the heart rate slows down a little bit, saves some energy while there's less oxygen in the lungs, while everything is calm. And then if we are in the stress state, the survival mode, the fight, flight, and freeze mode that mobilizes us for action, you know, to traditionally, of course, to hunt or to flee away from being hunted. In that mode, we are using all available forces, regardless of if we are breathing in or out. So this is how this variation between heartbeats can tell us whether we are in the deep parasympathetic restful state or in the stressful sympathetic state. While we are busy living our lives, because we are really poor at feeling this ourselves, all our senses are very good at exteroception, which is attention towards the outward world, and quite poor at interoception, you know, feeling our own body. It has never been needed. When our ancestors didn't hunt or was fighting or getting chased, they were relaxing, not wasting energy. So this sense was never needed. It was kind of built into the circumstances. But now in our day, the stress is too much. Or rather, we are not resting enough. We're not recovering enough. We are somewhat turned on all the time. And we're not constructed for that. So that will lead to the diseases of inflammation that you probably know about. Chronic low-grade inflammation that will create diseases in all the body's different organs. And the common denominator is this stress, this inflammation that happens. And heart rate variability is kind of a measure, indirect measure of the state of this inflammation. It also will inform you about the state of your mitochondria, because if you have poor mitochondria, that is also stressful for the system. So heart rate variability is kind of a like this magic number, really, that can tell you so much, but there's a lot of detective work because all the demands on the body will be reflected in the heart rate. So it could be, if your heart rate variability is low, a sign that your body is under stress, it could be anything from alcohol to overtraining to an injury to a poor diet, you know, to almost anything. And you have to do much of the detective work yourself, really. But the most important thing is that we have kind of a speedometer for the intensity of our lives that makes it possible to regulate our stress level, something that we haven't had before. So that was some information about it.
Yeah, fantastic explanation. I think that obviously there's many things that separate us humans from animals, but I think one of the biggest things is the fact that as humans, we can really bypass a lot of those signals that our bodies are really telling us, and that actually allows us to push to maximize human performance. I mean, if you look at a dog who's walking in the hot weather, when they get too hot, they're just going to sit there and not walk anymore, right? Or when they're tired, they're just going to sit there anymore. And then we have to drag that dog home. But for us as humans, it's like we're out walking. We probably have 2 kilometers left before we get home, but we're tired, exhausted. But we know that we only have 1 or 2 kilometers left. We're going to be able to push through, right? And so that allows us to adapt, overcome a lot of these different things. But if we don't have the opportunity to rest and recover, a lot of that stress can truly add up, which we'll talk a little bit more about stress in a little bit. So we have, so in regards to this data point, we measure it, right? And so for pulse, we have beats per minute. For blood pressure, we have our millimeters mercury, kilopascals, all those different things. What is the unit of measurement that we could use for heart rate variability? And what is that scale or range that helps us determine, are we having a higher heart rate variability or are we having a lower heart rate variability?
Yeah, so you want to have as high heart rate variability as is possible from your perspective, from your baseline. Because there's like a 50% individual genetic component that sets your baseline. And you want to have as good heart rate variability as you can have. And for example, if you really have a good heart rate variability, it may be 100 measured in milliseconds. And that would be that it's kind of the average difference between the heartbeats is 0.1. So it's not 1 second difference, for example, but it's 0.9 seconds difference or 1.1. So there's quite a good variation between the heartbeats. Maybe if you have a poor heart rate variability, it could be 15 milliseconds. So that would be, you know, almost 1 second, you know, like 0.985 in one beat and then 1 second to the next beat, for example, on an average. And of course, the better the heart rate variability, it's a sign of a good connection to your vagus nerve, it's a sign that you are able to recover quite well. So it's what you want. And there are many strategies to do that. It can be making sure you sleep better, making sure that you get enough sunlight in the, you know, in the summer or when the sun is there. It could be doing breath work, doing cold water immersion, doing light therapy, red light therapy, as you had one guest on a bit earlier. So there are some strategies to mitigate the stress also. And we have to be deliberate about how to rest, particularly if you want to perform, you know, at your best and you want to have an active lifestyle, do challenges, exercise, and so on. You have to also be very good at recovery, just like an athlete, I would say.
So there has been a lot of focus on the rest, active recovery standpoint. I'm gonna share with you or ask you a question. Just a general blanket statement, is stress bad? I think that oftentimes, given how active the world is, and especially out here in the States, we look at stress as kind of a bad thing. But is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Where do you find the value in stress and even just stress management?
Yeah, so stress is a good thing in the good doses. So we need to challenge ourselves both physically and mentally to build ourselves stronger. But you also have to recover to get the payback for the struggle. But it's how long you stress, you know, and how intense. And it's not really such a thing as bad stress. What could be bad stress would be, for example, alcohol, for example, nicotine. For example, food that you don't tolerate that will just stress your system and, you know, sap you of your forces so that you have less forces for your immune system. That would be a negative stress. But even stress that you don't want, you know, like COVID, you know, like on a society level, it was something we didn't want. You know, it was hard, but it built. You know, many podcasts, you know, came out of that. People were at home, you know, starting podcasts. And we were on Teams and Zoom and all everything that was just ready, you know, in a couple of months. And everybody was used to being on Zoom. So we had to overcome the difficulties. And coming out of it, there's been a lot of good things, you know. Of course, a lot of bad things too, but also good things. Even from a challenge that we never would have welcomed, you know, had we gotten the choice. And it's the same thing on a personal level too, that a really hard challenge, unwanted challenge, can also make you grow even stronger than a voluntary, controlled challenge. So we need stress. We just need to make sure that we recover. And of course, when you see the amount of stress through watching your heart rate, you can balance this. You will know where the balance is. Of course, now these gadgets that we're talking about, the Garmin watches and Oura rings, are using the artificial intelligence and using data from millions of users, giving you an estimate of your stress levels, you know. And that makes it so much easier to navigate. And at least in our society, where burnout is so common, I think that the numbers in the US and probably in Europe as well, is like 50% of the employees is in some state of burnout or on the verge of burnout. And you would be warned about that. You would have your, you know, watches flashing, you know, warning you that you're heading towards a very, very stressful time. And the problem with the stress is that if it's too much of it and too little recovery, then the diseases will get the upper hand. Where otherwise, if you have enough recovery, your immune system is working properly and can handle the challenges. Because it's diseases occurring all the time in our bodies. The immune system is constantly battling diseases or cancer, you know, is all every day. There will be some changes in your body that could end up as a cancer. So it's an ongoing fight. And we need to make our immune system as good as it can be, you know. So that's important.
In a way, the world is just the world, and everything in it is just consistently trying to kill us, and our ability to recover from those stresses is what's protecting us. And one of the things I really appreciate about HRV is the fact that it really does give us a metric in regards to how stressed and how recovered we are, because of the fact that we have the opportunities as humans to actually really, quote unquote, to tough things out, right? And we can really bypass a lot of those cues. And so when we look at heart rate variability, it's an indicator saying, hey, maybe you should spend a little bit more time recovering and not as much time stressing out or pushing yourself, which is really fantastic. So let's talk about measurements before we go into like associations with things that could actually influence our heart rate variability. So what are some of the tools that are available to measure heart rate variability?
Yeah, you have the Oura Ring, which is a great tool, particularly for sleep. And particularly if you don't want a watch on your hands and that you don't want to be constantly having the possibility to check your stress levels, so that it's a good for that use. It's not so good for finding out what stresses you in the daytime. So Oura is kind of the best tool for the nighttime, very good at sleep phases, recognizing when you are awake and not. While the best one for the daytime, that would be the Garmin watch. They would be the best ones by far at this point. You know, so many things happening, so in 6 months it may be totally different. But Garmin, through their system of body battery and stress in the moment, makes it possible to at any time just see the speed, you know, just push a button and you see the stress level on a level from 0 to 100. And it will have a body battery, so you can see in the morning how much have you charged. You can see how will it develop throughout the day. And this system is developed by a Finnish company called Firstbeat, which is a really, really good company. And I used to use their ECG monitors also to compare. So for micromanaging your stress level, to finding out, okay, this breakfast was stressful and this was not, you know, or this colleague that I had a meeting with from 1 to 2 was stressful, but afterwards, you know, I was always calm with the other colleague. Such things, you need the Garmin watch to find out. But you would also have, you know, at the moment I also have the Apple Watch. You could use the Athletic app for the Apple Watch. It's quite good, not quite as good as the other ones, but it's okay. And most of your smartwatches will have some way of measuring the heart rate variability and give you a sleep score and making at least sure that you're not kind of, it's kind of a guardrail, you know, so that you're not going into the ditch, you know, or into the other lane and crashing, you know, in metaphorically speaking. So that it keeps you on the road. It prevents you and it will warn you that if it's going too rough, it's too stressful. But by far, Garmin the best one. Oura also a very, very good alternative, especially for sleep.
Beautiful. Yeah, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. One thing that came to mind throughout my research and just trying to figure out what tool I would be using. And this is something that I've come across even in scientific research, especially when it comes to evaluating tools, is this concept of reliability and accuracy. And one of the things I found, and you let me know if you agree with this, but one of the things that I found is the fact that every one of these tools, if you compare, like obviously we can compare all the data across the tools, but as long as you have a tool that you consistently measure, at least you get some sort of an idea of a trend within that tool. Because if you're trying to compare your Oura versus your Garmin, unless you're a scientist like yourself, if you're like the typical consumer, having both of them and trying to compare the two might just be more confusing than anything. And so being able to just use a tool to measure something allows people to just get a better understanding of what is going to positively or negatively impact their stress and recovery.
Yeah, because they will weight the different aspects of your physiology, you know, because they measure movement, temperature, heart rate variability, sleep phases, but the way they interpret the different data could be different. And I'm of course used to that and I'm interested in it, you know, so for me it's easy, but as you say, for many people it would be enough having one tool to, so it doesn't get too much, you know. It could be stressful for some people. For most people, though, they think it's just fun, that this window into your function and physiology is just interesting. It's kind of a gamification of your health where you get points and it's not your avatar's life that is at stake in some video game. It's your life. It's your health. And now we have this number. So most people, and this is also the reason why the success of the book in Norway being on the bestseller list for close to 2 years, it's because it's fun. It's because it's both fun and you can feel the difference. I'm sure also with your Oura Ring that it's useful for you to keep being productive, to keep being rested when you need it and being able to regulate your stress. What is your experience?
Yeah, I actually found it to be... I'm a huge fan of data, but yes, the gamification of it actually makes it a lot more enjoyable. And what I found to be particularly interesting, and this was something that when people asked me if they should get an Oura Ring or another measuring tool, what I find is like some people might actually get a little overwhelmed with the data. And some
at Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
People can be so fixated, and it was kind of like when people go on, say, a nutrition or diet plan, and they transition going from not tracking their food to tracking every single one of their foods, and just the sheer act of trying to track their food made them extremely neurotic and everything like that. So what I would often say is, like, if you're someone who gets overwhelmed with data, maybe find another way to like track how you feel. But if you don't mind looking at how your behaviors influence your health and your body, then it's a great tool. And I really gained some really fantastic insights from measuring this information. And these insights aren't like extremely surprising, but I know that, well, we all know as a community that alcohol can actually influence our heart rate variability and how we feel, and also the quality of our sleep. And I live out in wine country in the US, and so I love drinking wine. But as I've gotten older, and my wife and I, we now have a daughter, I realized that it really does affect my sleep. And so it made me ask the question, all right, well, if I enjoy drinking wine, how can I enjoy it without having it impact my sleep? And there were a couple of different things that I've actually learned over the past 2 to 3 years of tracking it. One, I usually limit myself to one glass. Two is kind of pushing it. I realize I personally don't feel great after having a second glass of wine. But the first glass of wine, I actually do particularly well. It doesn't really affect my sleep if I have it a little bit earlier in the day. Not like 9 a.m. in the morning. I really more so like 1 or 2 o'clock maybe. I think the latest that would be best for me would be about 4 o'clock before it starts to impact my sleep. And so what that tells me is, okay, well, if today is going to be a glass of a wine day, then I'll have it during lunch or during like a lunch meal. And also having it with a meal versus drinking it on its own. So it's like, rather than going on a wine tasting and just drinking wine in the absence of food. So being able to like really break that down, I found to be particularly helpful. And then what was really exciting was that, our daughter was born as of this recording, 10 weeks today, and being able to see the evolution in this sleep and knowing that obviously the first 1 to 2 weeks, I barely got any sleep, but we went to bed at 8 o'clock and then didn't leave our bedroom till 8 o'clock the next morning. So we were in our bedroom for 8 hours. So in the, 12 hours. So in that 12 hour standpoint, I did get a little bit of sleep. But being able to see where those blocks happened, and also was a good way to retroactively look how often did our daughter wake up in the night to help us track, is she sleeping more, is she sleeping less, and how that actually impacts my readiness score when I wake up first thing in the morning.
This episode is brought to you by the Sciatica Protocol. Experience pain relief directly through your phone, anytime, anywhere. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com/the-sciatica-protocol.
Is heart rate variability more of a predictor of how the events are going to go as the day goes on? Or is it more of an indicator in regards to like, this is the current state of things of your body? And with your experience, where do you find this data point? Is it more of an indicator of something, or is it more of a predictor of something further down the line?
It is both of those things. Low heart rate variability will predispose to a lot of diseases, for example. And when you get the disease, it will be even further deteriorating. So it's both on the on the cause and consequence sides of disease. So it could show you, you know, for example, if you have a poor heart variability, for example, if you're a woman, you'd have an increased chance of getting endometriosis. If you get endometriosis, your heart rate variability will be lower, you know, for example. So it can be used both as a predictor and an indicator. And the important thing then is that this is a metric that you can control to some degree. And so that you can reduce the chances of getting these inflammation-based disorders, diseases. So I would say it's both an indicator and a predictor, and that's a good thing about it.
Yeah, it's, and I think what's interesting is that the majority of the other data points that we measure in healthcare is really more so, and I'll speak for it on the physical therapy and orthopedic standpoint, is that, say, like an X-ray, an MRI, like we're actually taking an image from a specific point in time. It's a snapshot of what is happening at that specific moment. And what ends up happening is that, and even like when I work with my patients in person during like a 45 minute or an hour session, is that when I see them, it's going to be that specific moment in time. And because of that specific moment in time, I don't have the opportunity to really predict of what's going to be happening in the future. And so being able to get this information, be able to say, okay, here's the current situation now, but this is how you can be predisposed, it gives us a lot more information to make informed decisions in regards to our health and how we're feeling, which then actually going over this, both being an indicator and predictor, let's talk about pain management and injury, because that's the majority of the folks who are listening here, is that they're either hurt or they want to make sure that they don't get hurt again. And leading up into this conversation, I did a little bit of research to say, is there some sort of correlation with heart rate variability and injury? And so there's two articles that I came across, listeners, I'm going to put into the show notes today. But one was actually like a systematic review of heart rate variability and pain. And then also there's a relationship to heart rate variability and injury. And they actually looked at it in both in CrossFit athletes, which was where I actually began my career. Before we take a deep dive into that research, tell us a little bit more about like what have you found in regards to any sort of link or correlation between heart rate variability and just the risk of developing orthopedic or repetitive stress injuries.
Yeah, in the research, we can see that low heart rate variability, too little sleep, for example, can be increase the risk of getting injured from any cause. So if you have a good sleep consistency, you're sleeping enough, you have a balanced heart rate variability, that will reduce the chances of you getting any kind of injury because your immune system is better able to take care of any problem that may occur. What is also interesting, I find, because of the book and because of my Instagram, I get informed of so many people and what they find. And many people find that when they have an injury or get hurt or get pain, their heart rate variability improves. And that is a bit interesting. And that is about acute pain that seems to calm the system down. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because of endorphins, you know, the body's natural self-producing morphine substance that may calm the system down when it gets hurt. It may be because you kind of tend to relax more, like if you have a migraine, a headache, pain somewhere, you calm down. But it seems to be that it's you get into the parasympathetic mode from pain. And this may also explain why self-mutilation calms people down, because quite often, you know, as they're working on the ER, I'm stitching up patients that have cut themselves and made scars, you know, self-mutilation as a way to relieve pain. And they say it calms them down, you know, the action of getting pain. When it comes to chronic pain, it seems to be more that people with a low heart rate variability, a stress system, are more prone to have chronic pains, maybe like sciatic pain and fibromyalgia and joint pain and so on. So there seems to be a difference there. And one of the studies that you showed me had a quite interesting test. You know, it's the cold test. You know, you put your hand into really cold water and it gets very painful. but it also gets very cold. And the cold itself can calm down the nervous system and shift you into the parasympathetic mode. So in that situation, it could be two reasons why it activated the parasympathetic side in that study. It could both be from the pain, but also from the cold. Because a lot of people find that, for example, if they are stressed, they can put their hands under the cold water, you know, at the faucet and calm down. So that could be a confounding factor in that study. And in the other study, they had given a saline infusion, IV, to get pain in the mandibular joint, this our muscle, the masseter muscle, I think. It was a reason why they put this high saline solution intravenously. I've also seen from, and that stressed the system. But I've seen that if I eat very salty food, that stresses the system. So that may also be a confounding factor in that study, so that the difference in the sympathetic activation could be both from the pain, but also from the salt in the blood circulation. So, but anyway, it's interesting to see what happens. And the most important thing that, and this you then need, you couldn't use the Oura Ring for this, because if you are doing a test like that and see how do you respond to the pain, you want to see your reaction real time. And then you would need the Garmin watch. So you could put your hands, you know, yourself into icy water and see what happens with the Garmin watch and see. That would be interesting. We, in Norway, we do a lot of cold plunges. Actually, tomorrow I'll go into the sauna and then out into the icy water. And that's really interesting because you can see how your heart rate changes inside the hot sauna and out into the icy water and how your heart rate reacts to it. And cold is a strong activator of the parasympathetic system. And it's, of course, why athletes use cold water immersion and cold therapy to dampen inflammation that will occur if they are training very hard. So it's interesting when you can see it, because it's always uncomfortable going into the cold water or in the cold shower. But when you see the result on your watch and you can see the result, it's also more motivating to do those a bit hard things.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. One of the things I've observed, and I just know for me and for the clients that I've worked with, when the folks who have a lower heart rate variability, say consistently, one of the things that they'll often complain of is how tired and how stressed they feel. And it really does correlate with the data that we're being presented. But also in addition to that, one of the things I've observed, noticed is the fact that the majority of the injuries that occur, say even during a physical activity, will often happen more so when the person is tired, when they're tired, when they're exhausted. It's not just typical fatigue where it's okay, the workout is done, I'm tired. It's really more so I've been having a really hard week. And I'm just so exhausted, but I need to get this workout in. I wasn't feeling great, and I did this workout, and all of a sudden I tweaked something, and then it hurt. And so what I find to be particularly useful, especially when using heart rate variability, is being able to say, how hard can you push yourself? But then also, if you're going in and you need to get your workout done, you need to get various different tasks done, it's saying be a little bit more conscious of how you're doing these activities, because you're not feeling your greatest, you're exhausted, your body's going through some sort of low-level inflammation already, and we need to manage how much stress we're putting our bodies through, so then that way we can avoid those opportunities to get injured. And you're absolutely right, the folks who are in pain for a long period of time, when they transition to that chronic pain state, it really does affect their sleep, it affects their coping mechanisms. And also when you're in a low, if you're in a consistent pain, you're also going to be dealing with a consistent level of inflammation. And so it is, I'm not going to say comforting, but I find it to be extremely helpful to be able to see the correlations, to be able to see, all right, well, you've been dealing with this pain, but it looks like your heart rate variability is slowly improving. So although you might not physically feel better, your body is going through this, and it's kind of like this invisible metric that we can't actually feel, but if we can record it, it actually does give us the necessary information to say, okay, well, whatever we're doing seems to be working, so let's continue on that. Or it's what we're doing isn't working, so we need to change our angle. And one of the things, especially in this day and age, by the time people come to speak to me, what I find is that these clients are like, okay, well, I've been dealing with this pain for a long period of time, but I just recently started drinking a lot less alcohol, eating a lot less junk food, focusing on my sleeping. And it is a little bit helpful. And then they do that and they're like, I'm still in pain. That actually tells me, okay, well, what you're dealing with is most likely some sort of mechanical issue. So now it makes my job a little bit easier because I can actually start to really zero in on what to do in regards to how to recover from that injury. So a very, very useful metric, and I find to be extremely, extremely helpful. I've said this term multiple times in this episode already, but like it's a metric that we can't necessarily record on ourselves, right? Like you can record your blood pressure using a blood pressure cuff. You can record your heart rate by just feeling your pulse and comparing it over, counting it over a minute. Tell us a little bit more. Like aside from those wearables, like is there anything else that we can do to keep track of our heart rate variability, or are these tools the only way for us to keep track of it?
Yeah, there are some solutions like HRV for training. I think it's spelled HRV and the number 4 training, where you can use your smartphone and just put it on the camera and put the light on and it will measure your heart rate variability, of course, then only in the moment as you do it. You know, it's not measuring throughout night and day. But it could be a way to learn more about your system. Other than that, it would be these wearables that you're having on yourself, you know, the 24 hours.
That makes total sense. And so here we are, the focus with heart rate variability is that it's a metric that we... It's a very important metric to measure, and we have a lot of tools that are accessible for that. Now, listeners, I'm going to put some of the links to the Oura and Garmin in the show notes if you are interested in learning about it. I'm a huge fan of the Oura Ring. Torkel said that the Garmin is also one of his favorites, so I'm going to go ahead and put that into the show notes. Torkel, you wrote a book all about heart rate variability and its impact on our health, or even just... Yeah, give us a rundown. Tell us a little bit more about the book that you wrote.
Yeah, the book, yeah, of course, explains about the autonomic nervous system, the parasympathetic, the sympathetic. It also explains how to regulate it, how to use the wearables. But maybe most importantly, it goes through the different lifestyle strategies that gives you more well-being in the moment, more health, and a better chance for longevity. So you get the best advice regarding sleep, movement and exercise, diet, and alcohol, and how and stress management. So it's all the advice really that you need to be able to navigate the modern lifestyle to improve your health. And as I said, it's the only book still on how to do this. Because of course, if you just got these numbers and that you were stressed and you didn't know how to get out of it, because most people will find out and when they put these wearables on that you will be too much stress in your life. And it would be hard to find the way yourself. I spent like 3 or 4 years doing the detective work myself, you know, gathering the information that I'm writing about in the book. So it's a long journey. It's like starting to play the piano and starting to play soccer or whatever. It will take some time to learn to know your autonomic nervous system, because it's a system that you haven't really had the insight into before you get these wearables. So you have to enjoy the journey, be curious, be patient, and be accepting to what you find. And that is what I'm writing about in the book. And it's also an audiobook, because I know many podcast listeners, they prefer to listen maybe as they're doing their workout or go running. So that would also be possible.
For the listeners out there who want to get access to this, what's the best way to get their hands or get their ears on the audiobook?
Yeah, they would be able to buy it on Amazon or all the outlets, Barnes and Noble and whatever. And the audiobook they could get there, or also I have it in my iPhone. I'm not sure how the Android, if they have a book app. But on the iPhone, you can get it from the book app, for example, and get the at least the Audible, probably the ebook as well.
Great. And what's the name of the book?
The Pulse Cure. That's the name. So.
Beautiful. Listeners, I'm going to go ahead and put that into the show notes as well. Dr. Torkil, it was great to meet you. This has been an eye-opening experience. I learned a lot, especially in regards to just understanding heart rate variability a little bit more. And I really appreciate your time and really looking forward to stay in touch and keeping an eye and following your research for the future. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And people can go to also on the Instagram, Dr. Torkel, if they want to see more of what I'm doing.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and put that information on to the show notes as well. Dr. Torkel, thank you so much again for being today's guest.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be able to talk about this for more people.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.